Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded.
So welcome to the podcast, Rakea. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to have a chat today.
Yeah. So to get us started, would you be able to provide a little background information about yourself and maybe talk about some things that you do to stay well?
Yes. So I'm a provisional psychologist here at Body Matters. I'm doing my master's in clinical psychology. I've worked as a mental health worker. I've been a volunteer at Lifeline. I've also worked in nursing. So I have a bit of experience in mental health. In terms of maybe some things I do to stay well, I think there's a lot of room to improve, but I've had a lot of experience of having to look after myself considering how much study and work I've done. I am very good at making routines that benefit me. So as soon as I get home, I turn all the lights off, put my little fairy lights on, I set myself up to cook myself a very nice meal, and then I go into a relaxation mode, whether that be having a bath or reading a book or spending time with my cat. It's all about the winding down and turning things off and sort of feeding my well-being overall. So making a clear boundary between stress related to work or anything outside of work. And then the moment I come home, it's completely different. This is about me. So that's how I try to look after myself.
I love that routine. I have like galaxy lights in my room as well that I like turn on. It's the zone. It's good.
Yeah.
So each week on the podcast, we like to ask our guests about a challenge that they have recently experienced and how they have managed to overcome it.
Recently, I've had end of year assignments and a lot of that last work things you have to do in terms of uni, and it's a bit of a race to the finish line without losing yourself as you go along. How did I manage it or overcome it? A lot of reaching out to friends, family, and even like my supervisors when I need to for reassurance or getting extra time to get things done, and just people reminding me that I'm actually doing a good job when I'm not in the zone myself to give myself that positive feedback. So looking at the social supports and people who can help me through those stressful times and kind of ease the burden of uni at its worst possible time.
Definitely asking for help, support, and getting that motivation to keep going can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So on the topic of today, it's spotting the food police. So what about we talk about what the food police is?
So the food police are the thoughts in your head or the beliefs and the negative voices telling you what to eat, when to eat, and how much to eat. It's like a very judgmental thought about everything that you're putting in your mouth. And the food police typically stems from what we like to call diet culture. So everything surrounding food and your well-being and body image is kind of convoluted in these rules that society has placed upon us and says, okay, the way that we diet or the way that we eat and look after our bodies is rigid now. And if you don't, then you're not going to be okay and you're not living up to the standards that we have for you. So it's just constantly policing food, policing your mind around food and eating.
And it can also be other people policing you with their own police thoughts.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. That's a really good point. We all have our own food police. Sometimes other people might try and manipulate you with their food police. They might not do that consciously, but their food police are allowed.
Yes. So then what is some common food police talk?
Some examples might include things like, you shouldn't eat that. That's too much for you. You're eating too much food. You shouldn't eat after a certain hour. You ate too much before, so don't eat for the rest of the day. You need to save calories for later. If there's like high fat foods or carbs, you might have a rule around those that you can't eat them. Sometimes foods might become no times foods, so you're not allowed to eat cake or chips ever. And yeah, just sort of telling you what you can and can't do. So very rigid rules.
And also having the mentality of like working off food, and food is not for your body, but to work off.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is not true or any good thought, but, you know.
No.
So then who might be playing the food police?
Well, we don't just wake up one day and naturally predisposed to having these types of thoughts. So usually the food police are being played by society or media. Sometimes it's even family or friends or health gurus. Can't see me doing the quotation marks here, but typically seen on things like Instagram, or even some people who are experts or critics or the food pushers. So it can literally be anyone, but usually it's an external source trying to say, I know better. I know exactly what you need to do and you need to follow my rules. And this is what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly. So then why do some people comment about other people's food choices?
I think it's a bit of an internal representation of what they're thinking a lot of the times. So it's not necessarily that they're experts in this situation, but it is a reflection of how rigid their own rules are. But their rules might come from misinformation or facts that aren't necessarily true. It can come from diet culture, and it can come from the media pushing an agenda of how you should be looking and how you can control the way you look, your shape and weight based off the food that you're eating. So it's a very negative, pessimistic look at food and how you can control yourself rather than your well-being overall.
Yes, definitely. So then how might some people try to play the role of the food police?
So trying to regulate other people's eating behaviours, saying their way of eating is the right way and the only way to eat, talking negatively about food or the food that someone's eating, and food shaming. So really making the covert, I guess, behaviors of saying, oh, you shouldn't be eating that. Why are you eating ice cream? You've just had like apple pie or something. Or it might be giving really uncomfortable looks and judgmental eyes or passive comments. So it could be really, really overt, or it could be, yeah, passive.
Yeah, those micro type aggressions or, yeah.
Yeah.
So then what are some food rules that we maybe need to spot as the food police?
Okay. I think a lot of people will probably have a little bit of a gist of this, because I think it's very, very common to think about these things, but avoiding carbs, avoiding sugars, fats, calories, or dense foods, eating clean or diet foods, so having very specific rules about what you can and can't eat, or not eating any processed foods. So very clear rules, rigid, you're not allowed to stray away from them, and it's beyond having an open mindset to foods and how much you enjoy it, or whether it's giving you pleasure or joy. Yeah,
and it is about incorporating all foods within balanced diet.
That's right. Yes.
So then how might eating according to one person's one size fits all rule not work?
Well, it doesn't take into account the diversity of people's bodies and their needs. It doesn't take into account genetics, height, activity levels, or lifestyle factors. A lot of people need different types of foods and different amounts of foods based on their body and what they're doing. If you think about the difference between someone who's plays a lot of sport, they're going to need a lot more energy to sustain their strength and their ability to engage in activity. Or if somebody's, you know, typically in a different sized body or works at a desk job, it is likely that they might need less energy to sustain their activity. But again, that shouldn't be a rule that's sort of policed in certain mm-hmm. ways. It's being able to sustain your well-being overall. And you just cannot comment really on another person's lifestyle unless you're very much a professional. And even the professionals say, look, we've got to be open-minded about what we eat. So yeah.
Yes,
it doesn't work. One size fit all absolutely doesn't work. So
we all have different body composition, height, muscle. It's all just different.
Yeah.
So then how can you unpack these food rules?
How can you unpack food rules? Well, start off small. Okay, if this has been a long journey, I'm not expecting anybody to change their life overnight because this is something really ingrained in our core beliefs. It's ingrained in society, so why would you be any different? See if you can make a list of the rules that you'll follow and try and choose one of the rules to work on. It can be as simple as, okay, I'm not allowed to have dessert. All right, interesting. What would happen if you had dessert? What would it look like? What would the smaller step look like? How could you expose yourself to the idea of dessert? And when you have the dessert, what happened? Did something change? Did nothing change? What were the thoughts that came to your head? Did you notice your anxiety peak? Did you notice your anxiety go down? So really, really starting off nice and small and simple, and you are the professional in your world or the expert in your life, so you'll know best what is the best step. Try it for one day without judgment, just being a little bit of a critical investigator of what happens. You know, I've been avoiding this for months or weeks or years. What's going to happen? I can just see it with my eyes or take observations. And then maybe even starting to replace restrictive food rules with more flexible, realistic ones. So an example of that is having people say, oh, no, junk food is no times. Okay, what if it's sometimes? Because that's more of a normalization around food. And understanding where can I be a little bit more critical of my thoughts? Am I maybe jumping to conclusions or engaging in a little bit of black and white thinking? Because automatic thoughts are not necessarily true thoughts. They're just thoughts that jump to our head because we've thought them so much that we've made a little highway or a pathway in our brain that we can go from A to B extremely quick. If you want to create new thoughts, and that's with exposure activities and being a little bit more critical in our thinking, it's going to take some time to get a highway from A to C instead. And you need to put in the work to understand, where did this belief come from? Why is the evidence showing me that I'm not going to, you know, implode if I have a chocolate at the end of the day? So you can unpack food rules in a really compassionate way and just taking little steps to understand, do I want to keep on believing this? If with the more time I am critical about it, it's showing me that's not true.
And when you look around at other people as well, you can start to notice and see, potentially it's maybe an ingrained thought that you've repeated so many times, it's like a habit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So then why should you spot and want to be aware of people trying to play the food police?
Well, we want to try and encourage having your own relationship with food and knowing that our bodies all have different needs. It will be able to help you make more critical decisions that are healthy with eating and physical activity and body image and all those sorts of things. Because if we believe or feed in too much into the food police, we're likely to increase our risk of developing disordered eating or, you know, disordered body image issues. So it's a bit of a protective factor to build the skills to cope with unrealistic thinking or automatic thoughts that are really unhelpful.
So then how can we begin to challenge the food police?
Okay, so there's lots of ways that we can challenge the food police. And in psychology, we talk about the thoughts, feelings, and behaviours. Most of the time we try in therapy to challenge the thoughts, which I've touched on before. There's also the behavioral side of challenging unhelpful thinking styles or problematic behaviors. So an example of a behavioral challenge is doing opposite action. So whatever you're thinking at the time, if you're really distressed, you're usually working with your emotional brain and your critical thinking's gone out the window. This is why behavioral stuff works so well, is go, okay, I'm just going to do the opposite or whatever I thought I was going to. So instead of restricting, I'm just going to quickly engage in having breakfast or having lunch. It's the most simple rule that you can do. And I like to chuck in a little bit of consequential thinking in there too. So, okay, if I do the opposite action, what is the consequence? Oh, I'll have energy. If I don't do the opposite action, what is the consequence? I'm going to be lacking nutrition and I'm going to be exhausted. So that's kind of bringing in thoughts and behaviors together. An emotional way of challenging the food police is to remember that emotions are not facts. Emotions are very temporary states that we experience, and emotions are really good, important information. So thank you, emotions, for making me feel anxious right now, because you're reminding me that I care about this one thing. But I don't have to engage with an anxious thought and restrict. I don't have to do that. It's just an emotion. I can watch you come in and I can watch you go out. So that's probably the behavioral and the emotional way you can challenge the food police. But then our final behavioral one could be just, instead of engaging in the thoughts or engaging in the emotions, is to regularly eat, do or engage in with a mental health professional who understands how much you should be eating in the normalization of foods. Take their advice, and you'll find that with more regular eating, the food police won't have a lot to stand on, because everything that they're telling you that's true turns out it isn't very true. Yeah.
Especially because your emotions sometimes are a response to your thoughts, so they aren't always accurate as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then how can you play the detective with the food police?
So I touched on a little bit with how you can unpack food rules. So in terms of, so okay, we looked at the behaviors and the emotional responses, you can do more of a thought challenging thing. So try and dig deep into the facts. And I'm quoting, putting little quote marks up right now, because are the facts real? What evidence do you have to suggest that you should be doing what the food police are saying? What are the professionals saying? How are other people living? Are the rules applying to them, or is it just you? Be aware you don't see all of people's diets. Even the professionals at one point in time said fats are bad. And now we know that that's definitely not true. We have a lot of jumping to conclusions with the food police. If you can slowly unpack the food rules and expose yourself to the potential that they're not true and that other people around you are potentially even following the same rules while other people aren't following any rules, you know, what makes it so, what makes the food police in your mind so right? What's really going on here? So just taking time to, I guess, try and challenge thoughts that you thought were true initially.
Some people even say that they follow certain rules or have certain things in mind, but they don't actually follow it. Be like, oh, I don't eat carbs, but then they'll eat like vegetables and bread and stuff, but they just say that they don't, or they're just like, oh no, not today, but tomorrow. Like, it's just, people don't always actually follow the things that they say. Like, you know, I could say I eat a pretty healthy diet, but I could, you know, eat takeout every meal and be healthy. Like, it's really just, it just depends on what people are actually doing, because it can be different to what they're telling you. So don't take it, oh, I can't eat this because they don't, because they probably do.
Yeah. And like, there are so many misconceptions. Like the idea that white rice is worse for you than brown rice. There's actually a lot of evidence to suggest there's way more benefits in certain areas when you eat white rice. Definitely. So, you know, you don't know. And just don't take these things as facts, whether it be what people are telling you or what you think about the foods that you're eating.
In countries like Japan and China, for centuries they've stripped back the brown coating from the brown rice to make it white rice, but they did it for a reason. And, you know, they lived pretty long lives. Some countries in Japan, like Okinawa, is it? Yeah. So then how can you set boundaries with people when they are playing the food police?
It's hard. It's definitely a difficult situation to be in. You know, you've got to try and understand where your threshold is with people, I think. If someone was trying to pressure or influence the way you're eating or your eating behaviours, or if it's like relatives wanting you to eat more, you know, you've got to understand where, again, I know that if I am engaging in conversation with them, doing what they're telling me, I'm probably going to go over my threshold and over my boundaries, and it's going to be worse for me. So how do I build the skills to have those really important conversations? Thank you for, you know, your feedback, but this has got nothing to do with me. This is my, I've told you where I'm standing, and I'm going to need you to respect that. You're kind of pushing your agenda on what's happening. If someone says that food is not healthy, you potentially say, what even is healthy? Nothing's black and white. It's just food. You know, we need to be able to have a whole diet, which in terms of diet, I mean like a lot of different types of foods for a lot of different types of occasions. And sometimes it's about enjoying food, whether that be for socializing, where you like a certain meal, or you like a certain, I don't know, do you like sweet foods over savory foods? So a holistic, open, flexible relationship with food. It's not just black and white and rigid rules. So yeah, it's hard to build up those boundaries, but you don't know until you start trying to do it.
Yes, especially if someone's like, oh, you shouldn't eat more or something, but then maybe you haven't eaten that much that day, or maybe you need more that day because over the week you've eaten a bit less, or yesterday, like they have no idea your body, your needs, your height, your activity levels, like not a clue.
Yeah.
So what does living without the food police look like?
It really comes down to intuitive eating. So getting up and thinking, oh, I'm hungry, and you go get a snack. Okay, that's intuitive eating. You know what you want to eat, and you're allowing yourself to do that in the moment. It's about mindful eating, so being there, enjoying the food, tasting the food, being present with the food whilst you eat it, rather than sort of not having a relationship or dissociating from that experience. It's about having food for socializing. It's about having food for joy.
But it can take a lot of time for some people to also get there. Like, I know some people who may be experiencing anorexia nervosa, just to get through the meals, they need distraction and to go quickly. And like, it does take a lot of work to get to mindful eating and enjoying the experience, because there can be like a lot of conflict and whatnot. But eventually you can.
You can. And you, there are people who have done it before you, and those people were in the same position. It's like, it's one of the worst disorders in the world, like ever in history, mental health disorders. So, you know, you're actually doing amazing with every step that you take, creating a positive relationship with food. So give yourself that feedback. Yes, I am doing this step for me. And I know the difference between the food police, and I know the difference between healthy me, my healthy brain.
Yes. So then what happens when you do spot and avoid the food police?
Well, you begin to develop body respect. So understanding what your body needs, and that it's, that food's not a tool to try and control it. You make food choices based on satisfaction, well-being, and based on your inner needs. You tune out external diet culture and have your own perspective, regardless of what other people are thinking or saying to you. And you're ultimately really tuning into your own needs of who you are and your relationship with food.
That's really important, that it is more about like even the hunger and fullness cues, like there's more to food than just eating for your nutritional needs.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So lastly, why should you want to keep an eye out for the food police?
Right. Well, this is why you should keep an eye out for the food police. You're going to be able to tune into what you really need. That's huge. Imagine being able to know your needs and meeting them. It washes out that diet culture and the external opinions of other people. So the intensity or the importance placed in those opinions lower so much that they don't even phase you anymore. It puts you as the priority, and it puts you as the driver of your own body and decisions. And it keeps you healthy and meeting your needs ecologically, physically, spiritually, holistically.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Rakea, for this interview. It's been fantastic.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.